Can I make a request that we study some meeting? Honorable Chokojani, Contra Letter. Can you observe silent prayers and meditations for us to open this meeting? Thank you very much. Allow me to declare this meeting officially open to welcome you all, honorable members present here today. Also to take the opportunity to welcome the Department of Higher Education's delegation that is present with us, led by Mr. Patel. We got fewer items for discussion. If you don't recall, last time we had an oversight visit taken in KZN, so we'll be dealing with such reports. Then the other issue that was supposed to be discussed was around the Department of Social Development. However, there's been an apology tendered by the minister that unfortunately the same day today they are also addressing the NA Portfolio Committee, so we'll have to reschedule a date. Fortunately enough, it's an official apology from the minister, not delegated in this case. So without any waste of time, allow me to go to the House for adoption of the agenda. Any mover? Honorable Michalakos.
Chairperson, thank you. Before we move for the adoption of the agenda, I know it doesn't fit in your committee, but I'm just scared we're not going to have a chance this week to discuss it. If we can, at the close of our cocktail business, perhaps just discuss quickly the plans, just for a briefing for the MPs, of what is the plan for the last week of November, the oversight trip to India, so that we can just be put up to date. I'm just scared if it doesn't happen this week, we're going to be left in the dark up to the last minute. If we can just add that, I know it's not cocked up business, but I think it's sufficiently important, please.
I'm not sure. Can I solicit the wisdom of the week, of the committees? Do you permit, maybe through the sanction of Honorable Torejan, that we engage, even if it's informal, I don't think there's any problem. Okay. Just after the meeting, Honorable George, I think it will be considered. But can we have then a mover for the adoption of the minutes? Let me also welcome my wonderful staff. You are more than welcome. Thank you very much for honoring the meeting also, after quite some time. There's a mover for the adoption of the agenda. Honorable Hale. No, it's a meeting procedure. You know, I just use that. You have the opportunity to be more acquainted with the meeting procedures, you know. So, for people of record, are you seconding, ma'am? You are not yet, Mama. Thank you very much. I think the officials are taking record of it. For the sake of the post, even the apologies, you must also make provision for apologies of the agenda. But there's a standard agenda in most instances from one institution to the other, honorable whip. Supported? Thank you very much. If supported by the whip, it's fine. Without any waste of time, allow me then to go to item of apologies. We haven't received any apology, all of us, we are present, and maybe I must just applaud this committee. We have been consistent in terms of attending meetings. You know, honestly speaking, you have been consistent. You know, give yourself a round of applause, please. No, I'm not going to degenerate my meeting. meeting into a meeting or a caucus of the Honorable Whip and Honorable Teboho. No, I'm not aware of that, but that's fine. Honorable George?
Chairperson, I've just been requested to tender an apology for Honorable Julius. He was planning to be on time, but he apparently had a few difficulties to get here, so he just asked me to.
But is he going to join us?
He is going to join us.
And you can also place it on record that Honorable Julius would be joining us a bit later if that's engaged, I suppose. So without any waste of time, can we then go to introductions? Can I start over there, item number 3?
Thank you, Chair. Morning. My name is Moses Titus Mkhanga, permanent delegate from Mpumalanga, and a member of this committee. Thank you.
Dumela mbotle, ke a leboga modula setulo, ke nna ga Lereko Manopole, moloko la komiti, go tswa ko Kapa Bokone. Thank you.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is George Michalakis. I'm a permanent delegate from the Free State.
Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Morgan Chetty, permanent delegate, KZN.
Thank you.
Dumelang. Ke Teboho Mokwele. Ke tswa go Bokone Bophirima. Ke leloko la komiti.
Good morning. Thank you, Chair. My name is Lwenzi Mane, KZN. Permanent delegate and member of the committee.
Goeiemôre. My name is Tumefane Kingi, permanent delegate from Cape Town, Western Cape.
Good morning. Like I did not summer water is that. Permanent delegate from Limpopo, a member of this committee. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. My name is Jihad Mohapi, the chair of the committee. May I also appreciate the presence of the officials. Quickly, if you can just introduce yourself, Dr. Langa.
Matthews, I'm a researcher to the committee. Good morning. Good morning, my name is Jennifer Thorpe. I'm a researcher to this committee.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Nkosana Mfuku. I'm the content advisor for this committee. Also, my name is Moss Manele. I am the committee secretary.
Okay. Thank you very much. You have also Fuad Can you also introduce yourself?
Good morning, Fuad Holiday, and the Chairperson's Office.
Okay, we have also our PMG reps. Can you just introduce yourself, Mama, so that we appreciate and recognize your person?
Good morning, my name is Nomgena Matandita, and I'm from Live Magazine.
Good morning, my name is Mpoa Rabiani, I'm from PMG.
Okay, ma'am, you said you are from Live Magazine. Live magazine. Without any waste of time, allow me then to take this opportunity to welcome our delegation from the Department of Higher Education. Maybe before they can just present, we'll just afford them an opportunity to introduce themselves. But up front, let me also apologize for the inconvenience. We are facing the challenge of air conditioners that are not in a good working condition. So bear with us in case you get hot. You are at liberty to remove anything that you think is making you feel feeling hot. Thank you very much, Mr. Patel.
Good morning, Chairperson and Honorable Members. My name is Feroz Patel, and I'm the Deputy Director General for Planning in the Department of Higher Education and Training. I would like to just, at the moment, tender the apology for our Director General, who has written to the committee and tendered his apologies. Both the Minister was on a trip to Sweden last week, and he just got back on Sunday, and on Tuesdays we have cabinet committees, Chairperson, so both the Minister and the Deputy Minister are engaged in the Cabinet Committee. I'll just ask my colleague that's accompanying me to also introduce herself.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Chantal Dwyer. I am responsible for enrollment planning in the University Academic Monitoring and Evaluation Directorate. Good morning. I'm Chantal Dwyer. I'm responsible for enrollment planning in the University Academic Planning Monitoring and Evaluation Unit, and I'm also the Department of Education and Training.
Thank you, Chairperson. I will try to keep to that. Basically, I think we know the history of black education in general and African education in particular. From centuries ago, from colonial times through apartheid, post-colonial was the Union of South Africa, post-Union of South Africa was the apartheid issue, and from 1957, the little gains that were made in colonial education were then further eroded from 1957. Then, of course, in the 80s was the homelands phenomenon, and 1994 really ushered in the opportunity of turning around the discrimination of the past. Now, our democratic dispensation, our higher education and training policy is based on, firstly, find its meaning from the Constitution, then the Education White Paper, Bulk 1, which is the organization and management of the education system, Education White Paper 3, which is a program for transformation. Then in 2008, the Ministerial Committee on Transformation and Social Cohesion, which we commonly know as the Sudene Report, was published in regards to some of the discriminatory practices that were taking place in some universities. So, for example, the incident in the Free State. 2012 saw the ushering of the National Development Plan, which very substantially dealt with higher education and the links of both higher education to social transformation as well as to economic development. In 2013, the minister, as had promised in the Green Paper, established the Ministerial Oversight Committee on Transformation. And basically, this was not going to be a committee that sits and writes reports, but investigates particular matter and advises the minister. And so a type of oversight, the name oversight says quite clearly. And then in 2014, the White Paper on Post-School Education and Training. Now, just to reflect on some of the progress and the pace of the progress is concerned. Jefferson, in 1993, 42% of the enrollment in universities was black, and that means African, colored, and Indian, as compared to 89% of the South African population. So one can see the mismatch of 89% would be a representative percentage and 52%. That was what we started off in 1993. By 2012, 82% of the enrollment in universities was black. But these percentages hide something which I'm going to come to a little later. The participation rate of Africans increased from 9% in 1993 to 16% in 2012. Now, this analysis, because of the 1993, was taken from the Higher Education South Africa report that was made to the Portfolio Committee on Higher Education and Training. These figures have slightly been updated, and the margin that they've changed is quite small. But I think what is significant is to look at the numbers. So the participation of rate of Africans increased from 9%. Participation rate is defined as 18 to 24 year olds in the population versus 18 to 24 year old African in universities. So if we have 6 million 18 to 24 year olds in the population, African population, and we have 16% in universities, that means only 16% of that group are in universities. And colleges from 13% to 14.3% over this period. For Indians and whites, the situation, in fact, has changed. For Indians, it increased from 40% in 1993 to 47.4% in 2012. Now, that means for every 10 young people in the population of 100 people in the population of Africans in 18 to 24, 16 of them are in university, 14 colors are in university. Indians, it moved from 40 out of 100 to 49 out of 100. So that means 1 in 2. And for whites, it decreased from 70 to 54. And I think these are the participation rate figures that we must keep an eye on. So although the numbers of African young people have increased in universities, as a percentage and a share of the population, the rate has been quite slow. Noting that Africans comprise 80% of the population, colored 9%, Indians 2%, and whites 9%. So that's the type of demographics that eventually we'll want to see in this particular group. Chairperson, media population estimates, just to give an idea of the population, in 2014, the media estimation is 54 million people in South Africa. We've just put that number there so that when I go further in my presentation, you can reflect in terms of the size. 43 million African, and then we also have male and female in regards to that. The percentage female is 51% and male is 49%. So those are the type of targets or benchmark that we need to keep in mind that we want to. So if we see that Africans are 80.2% of the population, that is what we would expect. We'll see Indian is 2.5, yet their participation rate is way beyond their population particular share. Chairperson, now gross enrollment ratios on the next slide. Now this particular slide shows the population of African to be 41 million on this particular slide. It will not probably be based on the estimates of the previous. And then the enrollment. So we'll notice that the gross enrollment ratio for African female is 19.1, which means it's better than the female, males at 16%. The other way around. Male 13.1 and the female is better at 19.1. Overall, the 16% that I indicated. In colors, that's the participation rates, the Indian, white, and the total. So total, of all our 18 to 24 year olds in the country, 19% of them are at university in terms of the enrollment. So I think the question is to be able to, while the African participation has increased in terms of numbers, we have to look at representation of the population and what are the challenges and constraints around it. This particular statistic talks to headcount enrollments in 2012. The total enrollment in 1993 was 473,000. And we want to compare, that's the analysis that we're doing here, the 30-year period from 1994 to current where we are. And then the 2012 statistic of around 938,000. So as I indicated, a correction, Chairperson, the participant organization rate is 20 to 24. I confuse that with the not in education and training. So the slide correctly depicts it is in the age group 20 to 24, 17%. At that time, in terms of our targets, planning targets, we had aimed to reach at this stage 20%. However, in terms of the National Development Plan by 2015, it has indicated that we should cover more than 20%, somewhere around 25%, including equity of 20 to 24-year-olds to be in educational institutions. So blacks, as defined as African colored and Indians, in 1993 were 52%, and in 2012 were 81%. And women, 1993, 43%, and in 2012, 58%. Now, Chairperson, there is a phenomenon here that we want to look more deeply into, and that is the participation of African males. African females are overtaking them. On the whole, in university enrollment, you'll see that the participation, noting that our gender balance is 51% female and 49% male. However, there's an inversion of this. So while at undergraduate level we find more women are represented, at postgraduate level we're finding that less women are represented. And that's also a policy area that we're particularly looking at, is to be able to look at what are the constraints for women to continue in regards to their studies. And if those, some of those constraints are personal and domestic, we will have to try to look at them and attend to them. In regards to that. In the period 2006 to 2011, again, just looking at the changes in the enrollment, we can see African enrollment increased from 451,000 to 640,000. While you can see that the increase in the colored enrollment was just about 11,000, of Indians about 200 and some odd, whites decreased by about 7,000. So these numbers do disguise the fact in terms of the percentage. Because Africans are 80% of the population, if you say 78%, there's a big number that's allocated for. 78% may look close to. Whereas if you look at the lower numbers in colored and Indian, there, a 1% difference makes a very big number change within that particular group. But anyway, this particular enrollment from 2006 to 2011 does show some progress, albeit I'm coming to the issues just now. The quality issues, going in terms of quality, the success rate, if we take a norm of 80% of Africans, was 71%, and of whites, 82%. Graduation rate, that means that the norm is that it is assuming that in a four-year degree, you will complete your degree in 4 years, and when you graduate out, so the number that goes in and the number that comes out, for African was 16% and for whites 22%. So still below the international norm, but there's a quality issue that we have to address in terms of the success rate for African as well as the graduation rate. Now the throughput and the dropout, this is one of the most concerning matters that we have to deal with. There's a lot of funds that are tied up in young people that are in university. And if they are not going to be able to succeed, or we're not going to assist them to succeed, all they're going to do is utilize the resources, keeping other people out. So imagine a young person being in university for 3 years, funded for 3 years, and passes out. Whereas another young person being in university for 6 years to do a three-year course means one other person is not able to be funded around that. And these percentages are quite concerning. The African dropout 16% of Africans take 3 years to complete their degree within the time that is allotted, if you take 3 years. Whites, 44% of them complete within the stipulated time. So that is for 3 years. In terms of 6 years, 41% of Africans complete their 3 year degree within 6 years, and white 65% of them complete it. But now this is the issue of dropout, those that never ever complete. So that means that they probably there for 4 years, 5 years, 6 years, and this is also of us a very serious concern. Spending 6 years in a university not having your qualification is a problem. Part of the problem we're going to be looking at is maybe that the stretch of a 4 year degree or a 3 year degree is too long. That we may have to have, like the United States, we have associate degrees. So you can do your 2 year chunk of that, you can get recognized in a qualification and move on. Whereas sometimes it's just the issue of getting that paper. Because if you don't finish your undergraduate, the last paper that you get was a matric certificate. And then you spent 6 or 8 years in university. Now the African dropout is almost 60%, and white dropout at 35%. So all around, so particularly there is an issue around quality in our race rule. Even I mean the whites, the 35% is not something that is acceptable. But the issue we need to find out is what are the causes, what are the social consequences, and what are the reasons, and how can we as a department mitigate against them? And we have put some mitigation programs. The next one, Chairperson, is on staff. And this particular graph shows you in 2011, you can see that in permanent staff, we still overrepresented. Blacks are whites are overrepresented and blacks underrepresented in all categories of permanent and temporary and total. That's also a concern, and we will come just now to how we are going to mitigate against that. In terms of gender, chairperson, women and men, if we say that the undergraduate women are 58% participation rate, women they're still below men in regards to their representation, but very slight in terms of the numbers. But that slight makes still a big difference. Slight makes a big difference. 1,500 difference. If you want a 50-50, that means we'll have to catch up there. Now, if we look at postgraduates, doctoral graduates by race, in 1994, and this is an interesting figure, 1994, we had 737 people doing doctoral studies, of which 666 were white and 71 was black. 90% white, 9.6% black. In 2000, the number did not change much, 674 298. Did not change much for white, but we did increase blacks. So as we brought in new students, preference was to be able to look at funding, additional funding for black students. And in 2007, so you can see there's a very steady increase. We actually halved the doctoral graduates percentage participation of white, and we've five-folded, almost five times that of blacks. However, that's still not enough for a country of our size and in terms of now. Chairperson, very, very quick, highlights a particular graph. I tried to keep this graph as simple as possible. Trends in undergraduate enrollment by race. So these are in terms of numbers. So while that blue line looks dramatic, we can say that from 1994 to 2012, we've had a concerted effort to push. But if somebody asks, has change towards your targets or in terms of representative population, as I showed earlier, not really, because Africa started off from a very low base in terms of numbers. Remember, these are numbers. They started off with a very low base. I mean, there were about slightly more than 100,000 Africans enrolled in 1994 and a similar number of whites of 100,000. But clearly the population percentages are quite skewed. So you can see that white enrollment has tended to, in fact, decrease. African enrollment has increased. But please do not consider this graph to be dramatic, with the pink blue line going up. As I indicated, it's very low base. The next one is trends in undergraduate enrollment by gender, and this is the one that shows that the female in 1994 almost equal 50-50 split, women slightly higher as expected, but this is the trend that we have to be concerned about. There are almost 100,000 gap, one third gap between the number of male and females. And Chairperson, that is a possible socioeconomic risk that we have to manage. Why are young African males not participating? And in fact, our gender challenge is in the other direction, because gender is neutral. We normally, when we talk of gender issues, it's mostly issues around disadvantage and vulnerability on women. In this case, young people, vulnerability of young African male. If you go to the next one, it's the undergraduate graduation race by race. And you can see the top line is the graduation is 18% for whites. We said the ideal is 25%. So it's 18% for whites. And African, colored, and Indian have remained around between the 9% and 14%. There's been an increase in the African one, so there is improvement. Basically, the colored and Indian have remained consistent within that particular target. The next picture is the undergraduate graduation rate. Somebody was being a bit creative here by merging the two terms. It's undergraduate graduation rate. So if you look at males from 1994 to 2013, it is the blue line. You can see that females have dramatically particular increase, and then there's a normalization. But an interesting trend is the upward movements between 2012 and 2013. The trend is pointing in the correct direction. We will have to find out what the anomalies were between 1994 and 2010, but way forward, that looks positive. The next one is the PhD graduates. The top line is whites again. The bottom lines are colored, Indian, and African. And we can see that, interestingly, both the colored and the African PhD graduation rates are increasing. So at least we are getting people coming in, and those people are staying the course and completing. You can see that within the black, if we just go back one, within the black group of African, colored, and Indian, we have been shifting resources more in ensuring that we are able to attract African and colored people towards postgraduate. PhD graduation rates by, that's the next one, by gender. So they're doing equally well, both male and female. And again, that you know, the post 1994 drop, we're trying to recover that, and you can see from 2012 to 2013 we're moving up, but that gap with the female one is still a gap, and we have to ensure that we deal with it. Chairperson, on the academic staff, Higher Education South Africa sent to the Portfolio Committee on the 5th of March 2014 about the issue of racism and patriarchy as key features of colonial, and I spoke to that whole particular issue. city. The proportions of black academic staff at universities range from 17 to 91%, and the representation of women vary. The white paper also deals with, in the next slide, on the policy issues. And in the white paper, we say that redress policies have shown improvement for blacks and women, have worked from 1994. However, we're saying that it's not enough. The proportion of males has decreased, so again, we've noted that as a policy area. Has decreased significantly. And this must be a cause of concern, and that's what the white paper is already pronouncing from a policy. Change has also taken place in regard to staffing. The proportions have grown, change has been slower, and remains an area requiring policy attention. And I'll allude to some of those. Jefferson, we will have to be very creative. Then the Oversight Committee is a mechanism in trying to deal with public accountability versus university autonomy. And the issue is that these demographics cannot wait for very long processes of transformation within universities. But we have to work within the legislative processes, but there are levers that one has to begin to use. So the Oversight Committee's purpose is focused on the need to overcome discrimination in universities and to advise the minister. Because it is a sad fact, Chairperson, that 2 decades after the advent of democracy, many black students still feel marginalized in historically white universities, and female students still find themselves being harassed on university campuses, even by staff members, as we are well aware of the issue of at Wits University. Then, currently, at Jefferson, I've sent both our report to the Commission for Gender Equity that we have submitted, as well as the draft social inclusion policy. The minister released this particular policy on August 2014 for public comment. The purpose of the policy is to assist public institutions to develop their own social inclusion policies and guidelines. This policy will be used to monitor institutions and take transformation priorities into account. So the policy has been processed for the minister, and so it will be published very soon, as soon as the minister takes into account the public comment. Part of it is that we'll also include a charter where universities, councils, as well as the vice chancellors and management begin to take on a pledge that some of these stark disparities in terms of inclusion are dealt with. Now, interventions. It's a little bit, and we need to do much, much more. And that is around the foundation provisioning program. Firstly, we understand the context that many African young people come from, both rural and in terms of the quality of education accessible to them. So it is to, as our minister says, we can't say basic education is a problem. Although that may be the cause, but the system is so big they cannot do it alone, that we cannot say we will only accept you if you have this top-notch particular result. The minister says, we can't ship you, we can't export you, we will have to do something. And therefore, we're putting additional resources into foundation provisioning programs so that these are designed to assist underprepared students to succeed. And we've put 236 million in the 2014 financial year, and increasing as we go on. Then teaching and research development grant around quality. 609 million for teaching development and 197 million for research development. And this is designed to improve the qualifications of academic staff and improve teaching quality. Including this will be a bias towards underrepresented groups in the academic enterprise. So staffing South African universities We also have a framework, a comprehensive transformative approach to building capacity and developing future generations of academics. The South African Universities Framework takes as a starting point the urgent imperative to recruit, support and retain black and female academic staff, and to deal with a serious issue of underrepresentation. Now, Chairperson, we have to be very creative here. Some of the anecdotal issues is telling us that often in families, sometimes the graduates are the first graduates in the family that have come out of the university qualification. And families want to see the payback. So often young people are diverted to, after qualifying, to move into positions, whether it's chartered accounting, engineering, because we're short all over. But the issue is, how do we retain academics and the salaries that academics earn that is not going to be fitting well with the family? And so we have to look at very lucrative scholarships in order to, because that's a socioeconomic problem that we have to deal with. Maybe in 30, 40 years' time, when there's no longer a demand for, because we've reached representation in the workforce, maybe young people will then begin to take on academic careers. But this is something that we have to particularly nurture. And so that's the approach to retain. I'm not going to read through this chapter. The rate can say it's looking at scholars, you know, intellectuals. Chairperson, from our old days, when, you know, I'm quite gray, in our old days, we had this intellectual enterprise, we had time to reflect, to think. Today, young people are just running around, especially if you graduated, as I indicated, you need to earn the money, and then your family is also looking forward to an income so that you can get the other brothers and sisters into university, that we neglected scholarship. The new generation of academics, existing academics, we need to retool them and upskill them, and supplementary staff employment, where specific skills are required, they will be targeted for. Here was in the implementation phase one in 2015, involves the intake. So this is what we're starting of one cohort of scholars in what we call NGAP. Maybe the NGAP means to fill the gap, the new generation of academic programs. And the first cohort is planned to comprise 200. The target is 85% South African black scholars appointed by end of June 2015, and priority will be given to black women. Future intakes are planned to grow and reach an intake of 400 per annum. Chairperson, thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Can we applaud the presentation? Very informed. Honorable Teboho, do you mind applauding Mr. Patel? Thank you very much. Can you applaud the Honorable Teboho also? Thank you very much. Honorable members, without any waste of time, let's interact with the record, with the presentation. Remember, behind the back of our mind, the issue of education is priority number one in terms of government priority. Two, we must also bear it in our mind. We are still on a journey from apartheid colonialism type of a system to where we are foreseeing the future. In a journey, there will always be ups and downs, but without necessarily consuming most of the time, let me afford each and every member an opportunity to interact with the report. Honorable members. I was not necessarily suppressing. Honorable Teboho, any clarity-seeking questions and input? Remember, it's also part of our oversight. Honorable Khaled.
Thank you, Chair. Let me welcome the report. It gives us hope. Even though there's a lot of work still needs to be done, but it gives us hope that there is progress. Mine is with regards to I'm happy there's the increase of the, particularly women, with regards to enrollment. but I'm just want to check whether department have been checking or tried to make a research with regards to the graduation, because of the slides in the presentation could not give us really tracing these women at the graduation.
Can you speak far away from the mic, you're not so audible now.
I did graduate. So that's the reason why I'm raising that concern with regards to the
I don't want to.
She's the
mic. She's not audible. Don't be closer to it too much.
It's the same. I put it there, comes closer to me. It's the same. The other one is with regards to the fluctuation.
The first one. What is the first one? I don't remember. Can I capture the first one? I didn't pick it up off the course of record.
Keep check on make a research with regards to the this women are graduating. The number that we have received the numbers, but the numbers have increased the percentage. But we're not sure how many of it, the percentage. For example, 80% of graduates are registering. How many of them, percentage of the one who are graduating?
Okay.
The other one, the with regards to fluctuations, I think it's said number 16. I'm happy that the trend is in 14. It shows that there's an increase with regards to the women. It's very high. But when it goes to a rate, size 16, there's a fluctuation of women. It was, in 1994, it was above 14%. Now in 2013, it's below 14%. So if the department has made it short that we said, because of, if you want to address the issue of transformation and there's a fluctuation, you need to take track and come up with a formula. How are you going to address that?
That's a normality. What are you going to do as a plan? Any other clarity-seeking questions?
I hear there's a framework that is in place. But just to ease us, because of with regards to the transformation of the staff of the academic, that fast, even though there's a percentage, but the 2002 difference.
Which slide are you referring to?
11.
Page?
I don't know which page. I'm pointing the slide. The page, I don't know the page.
Slide number 11.
So it gives us concern with regards to the issue of gender. That I heard the president say there's a framework. Where is the framework? Can you avail us progress that we'll be able to see how are you going to ensure that you navigate and be able to say to as a select committee you are rest assured that issue will be addressed. Because to me, since it's a slave piece of addressing the staff normatives and particularly the issue of gender. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Khali. Any other clarity-seeking questions? Honorable Tundi.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, this is a very good presentation. But Chairperson, I don't know whether the people who are disabled in this quiet about them, I don't know whether they're included in those terms of women and men and black and white, because I find a lot of people who are disabled who doesn't quite go for tertiary and other things. I don't know whether how is it this report tells us about it. Thank you.
Okay. Although just to afford other honorable members an opportunity just before I afford them. Remember, our committee is mainly focusing on women. Maybe it might be a reason, but I'm not trying to be preemptive, but would afford Mr. Patel just to clarify specifically on issues of people with disability. Anyhow, it's more relevant for us to have the benefit of the report. Any other clarity seeking question? Honorable Tebo.
Actually, it's not a question. It's just a a comment to say we acknowledge as a committee the presentation, though it was too graphic for a person that doesn't know how to go through graphics. It becomes very much challenging, but it's a good presentation, and I really appreciate it. I can see this a progress in terms of developing women. So I really appreciate it, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you very much. It was just an acknowledgement on our Teboho. Any other clarity seeking questions? Honorable Tavejani, then Honorable Whip. I think demanded the amount.
Thanks, Chairperson. And like colleagues have said, thanks for the presentation. But I wanted to check, Honorable Chair, the relation of the presentation with the graduates that are not able to obtain their results. As I'm sure I've seen even yesterday in one article, where a sizable amount of women have been, you know, raising that since, you know, around 2010-12, they've been graduated and they're unable to get the result because they're owing the tertiary. How do you, you know, find a slot to talk to this kind of, you know, challenge? Because, Chair, I would imagine graduation are not for the sake of just graduation. It's to build and change one's life. And if in that kind of scenario, how do we then talk to it in the briefing that we are receiving? Thank you, Chair.
Now, give Honorable Zimande, then immediately thereafter would have the delegation responding, then we'd have a follow-up on our check, please. Thank you.
Yeah, no, thank you, Chair. I think I will make observations, Chair, more than highlighting on the slide, I guess, on the point of Honorable Mugwili being graphic. But also, Chair, I think what, same minds think alike on what on the point of Honorable Klimbi. I think the fact, Chair, is that in the gender composition, whether there's women, there is a disabled woman. Where there's youth, there's a disabled young person. And I think it's a point to underscore that at any rate, there is a need, if it's not done, there is a need for to give that full picture. It would only be full when all of those specifics and elements are taken into account. And then furthermore, would also be the issue, because I don't know, there might be some way it's shown, but you see, it doesn't, the transformation when we talk about, it means here, I don't know whether do we talk about Walter Sisulu University, for instance, in the Transkei. Does it cover those elements, what we are reading from the research? Does it cover what comes from the University of Venda or University of Zurich, for instance, or Forte for that matter? Because all of those things coming together, the picture might be showing well, but it's comparing what to what. I think it's something that I'm pondering on. As I said, it's observations, but there might be answers or comments further to the observations that I've made. That talks to the other elements of categorization of our population, your rural, your urban, your township, you know, those kind of things. Because when we talk the intake, who has an easy access to the intake? Is it a person in the rural? Is it a person in the township? Is it a person who is already your so-called born free, so from the model schools? So those kind of things, I think, are quite important for me to make a comment on. I thank you.
Thank you very much. Those are the clarity-seeking questions. I think you have put the issue of disability in a clear context. I think it's well understood, and I think it should be responded to. Also, as one of the questions asked, can I then afford the delegation to respond?
Thank you, Chairperson. I think I'll go through it and ask Chantel to fill in the missing pieces. I think the comments and the questions are well received, and thank you for the comments. Honourable Khan's question is the graduation rates for women. On that slide, there was a slide on male and female graduation rates. So, what was slide number? No. Undergraduation rates, yes. There was that particular slide in terms of the breakdown for women. The anomaly, we've noted it, but we've noted that from 2012, that we are moving together. Chantel will give indications of what that anomaly is, but I just want to remind ourselves this graph is what normal statisticians say. We must never show graphs like this. You'll notice that the vertical axis only starts at 12%, doesn't start at 0%. So the differences are amplified. The difference is between 13.2 and 14.7. So it's about 1.5% particular difference. But it's something that we will keep an eye on to ensure that we don't have the repeat. But we don't have detailed analysis of that. On slide 11, the Honourable Member Khale raised the issue of academics. If we can just go to that slide 11, we will give you more information on that particular program, and Chantel will add in regards to that framework, the what is called the SSA, yeah, the undergraduate issue around women. But Honourable Chair, I think the issue is we need a bit more in-depth study around the issue of, I mean, there are other gender issues not linked to education that may be affecting that particular issue. So it's about house, home, family, all those particular issues. And that's why I'm saying that we have to be a bit more creative in terms of trying to see how we can deal and mitigate against those things that prevent women from taking it up. But Sakhar will give us. Honourable Kimby, in terms of the end, Honourable Zamandi raised the issue of disabled. Chairperson, we focused, the Minister has 7 key equity goals. Number one is race, gender, class. And it's often something that we haven't been looking at since 1994, because basically blacks in general and Africans in particular, their class status was related to their race. But as we move forward, as Honourable Zamandi pointed out in regards to the rural issues, is who's getting in. If we're saying we're increasing African, are we dealing with rural, are we dealing with the disabled, are we dealing with poor, or is it only the elites getting into the University of Cape Town and the University of Witwatersrand? So there is a whole issue on class matter. Age is another thing that we have to look at. Geography we define as ruralness, disability, and health. But let me talk to the disability query. The minister is committed to developing a framework for policy framework for disability. Chairperson, to be absolutely honest, we do not have as much, and it's correct. You know, the portfolio committee asked us to address race and gender, but it's correct that not much can be sung about in regards to higher education and disability. We have tried, for example, by making specific grants available to universities to beef up their disability units. But there hasn't been dedicated funding. For example, the disabled have a greater burden, financial burden, whether it's about mobility, it's about accessibility. So I want to admit on that particular front, again, it's part of our institutional autonomy versus public accountability. But the policy framework will have to begin to address that, including the funding, including specialist residential facilities, including transport, because those are the costs for able-bodied persons we do not take. And we want to monitor and track the issue of opportunities for the disabled. We want to track them from school level, so to identify them in special schools where they are, to be able to support them to get into tertiary institutions, but also to perhaps grant them the issue of that some disabled learners, their disability affects their rate of being able to compete in terms of learning and teaching. So, for example, you may need 6 hours to write an examination paper when able-bodied person requires 3. So it's a number of those rules, curriculum, etc., that you have to, including admission requirements. I mean, so please be assured that it's high on our agenda pretty soon, within the next week or two. In fact, because I had to be that submission from the minister is on my table for him to sign the government gazette announcing the issue. Honorable Tomoho, thanks for the comments. Honorable Tobagane, the issue of the graduates not able to receive result owing fee. This is a double-edged sword in a way, and the issue is that NSFAS depends on those that have had the opportunity, are working to be able to repay their loan so that we can bring in a new cohort of people. But then the minister was under his control, he dealt with it, and there was an amnesty granted to a number of young people. In regards to those that owe universities their fees, not NSFAS but universities, and the results are being withheld, it is a matter of concern. Here, we have been dealing on a one-to-one basis with universities in regards to the granting amnesty or debt counseling or debt rescheduling in regards to that. I think, Honorable Zamandi, when you mentioned Walter Sisulu, Venda, and Zululand, I think the issue that you were raising is that average disguises the anomalies. When you average out, it disguises what is. We do have individual statistics and analysis around these universities. One issue is these universities don't have a problem which is race representativity. In fact, it's the other way around. In terms of we need to encourage our compatriots, white, Indian, and coloured, to begin to attend these universities, lest they continue having the Bush college particular slogan. But in regards to intake and who has an opportunity, we've set aside considerable amount of money prioritizing career development planning. Because, Chairperson, educational opportunities, when they are limited to in terms of the funding, has to be made available equitably to every citizen, must have an equal chance of getting that one position. And that's the issue to ensure, you know, I mean, we have to put safeguards in so that university administration don't get their learners in and their connections in, that we as officials don't try to push our young children into UCT and WITS. And that's the issue of coming up with a public framework where we all have to obey the rules and to be able to do that. So we have a central applications process that the minister is establishing, career and the career development issues. So I think I've covered all the clarity, but Chairperson, if not, there will be a second round. But Chantel?
Thank you, Chair. Allow me to add a few more quantitative data to the issues at hand. In relation to the graduation rates on slide 16, we prefer not to use graduation rates per se because it doesn't give an accurate depiction. It's calculated in terms of the graduates in a particular year over the enrollments in a particular year. So it can fluctuate immensely if the enrollments increase suddenly in a particular field. What would be a more accurate depiction would be using cohort rates, where you actually analyze the same set of people that entered the course. But just to give you some information, in terms of the female graduates, in 2007, there were 74,000 female graduates, which increased to 99,000 in 2012, which is an increase of 6%. So there has been some strides in female graduates increasing over that five-year period. In relation to the staff framework that was discussed by Ms. Patel earlier, the emphasis has been on focusing on changing our academic staff from the average stereotypical depiction of white, older males involved in academics, and by focusing more on females and black staff and, in a sense, growing your own timber. So there are initiatives in place to ensure that females increase not only in number, but also in the particular area of work, not really focusing on being enrolled in maybe administrative duties, but more senior or research or management personnel. In relation to the figures of disabilities, we do capture information on disabilities on our HEMIS database. The figures currently, in 2012, we have 6,277 people that are disabled on our database, which has increased to 7,110 persons in 2013. So there has been an increase in the number of people studying with disabilities.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just for Honorable Fale, we will, as soon as we get back, we'll get us whatever documentation is public in regards to the academics program, and we'll make it available to the Secretary of Committee. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Can I give Honorable Chetty?
Yeah, thank you, sir. And as much as I understand that this is a gender and racial transformation presentation, I have two questions of concern regarding higher education, and I appreciate it if possible that DG could answer it. One, are we not seeing the impact of having reduced the pass percentage rate at our primary and secondary schooling, and this now having a negative impact on the dropout rate? Two, what is the status for the international recognition of our SA degrees? I raise this in view of your comment regarding to the proposed associate degrees to assist those who drop out prior to graduation.
Chair.
Mr. Deputy, the Minister is not
here. What is the second question?
What is the status for the international recognition of our SA degrees? I raise this in view of your comment referring to the proposed associate degrees to assist those who drop out prior to graduation. And Chair, to you, Mr. Deputy, the Minister is not here. As I would love to have appreciated hearing his response. If we are not creating a country of underachievers as the norm rather than the exception, and 20 years into democracy, surely our born frees should be allowed enrollment into universities based on the academic results and not other criteria. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Thank you very much. Other questions on our Khale? And then our Sanga?
Thank you, Chair.
I think you'll be the last, then the Chair will just pose questions.
I do appreciate it that other information will be provided. But the reason why I ask, because of, I've heard the fact that of the graduation rate and success rate, it affects.
You are not talking about honest.
It affects this gender breakdown. It gives a race breakdown. That's the reason why I ask specifically about the gender. So, just like number 96, so since we're talking about transformation, and particularly with regards to gender. Slide 9 is African and white, and then also graduation is also African and white. We are requesting the gender breakdown. I just want to check whether the department has made observation with regards to, I noticed and also in the presentation you mentioned that there's a slight decline with regards to women undertaking postgraduate studies. So, just and also in the slide 18, where it says PhDs postgraduate, also it says there's a low, there's significant increase of women with regards to PhDs. That it has a relationship with regards to observation, or maybe the department has undertaken some analysis as I try to find out why women are not progressing to postgraduate because of there's the slow pace of leadership position in the country, in private and public, women occupying leadership positions, as well in universities, because we find out in the councils mostly dominated by men than women. That is not contributing that women not undertaking or proceeding to the postgraduate. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mkang.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. Actually, I'm being covered by Honorable Manapole, but there is one or two questions that I also want to pose. I have seen your draft policies published during August, 23rd August. I want to know, because you are saying we must, you are also expecting comments. You are also expecting comments from the sector. Now, I want to know, in terms of your public hearings, how far have you went? Did you do much in terms of the policy itself? The second one, I just saw your slide number four. Slide number four, you spoke of. Just I'm worried about this white, the 34% of whites that are no longer. The vice big difference from 70 to 45%, 54.7%. Now my concern is, where are these white kids going? Where are they attending? Does that not pose a security threat to our country? Thank you.
Thank you very much. A decline in terms of percentage. Can I also pose this following question? Bear with me. Slide number 12. If you go to slide number 12, it's talking about the doctoral students. Yes, I just want to check. In terms of dropout rates of both African and white, can you just get an indication in terms of the dropout, and also in terms of the international norms, how do we really interface with that particular aspect? Then if you go also to slide number 9, again, dropout. What has been the cause for this dropout? I think it's worrying, because money is being invested, but at the end of the day, most of the time, people are just not really completing, and I think it's just a call. What is really being done to mitigate against the current situation, particularly the percentage itself? Then three, the committees in most instances are being established in South Africa. And like I indicated earlier on, Mr. Patel, that we are on a journey. But the journey without a clear destination is a worrying factor. I just want to know, the ministerial committee, the oversight committee, in terms of their
solutions. What is it that they are specifically targeting to achieve? How far are they? If not, what has been the challenges? Then also, a call for consent. We have pieces of legislation that have been put in place to ensure that we do away with the disparities of the past, particularly around the employment opportunities. Hence, you have also Employment Equity Act to ensure that we phase out the challenges. And if you check, in terms of the staff component, transformation of staff, it is very clear that whites are still dominating in terms of that. What is the plan of the department to ensure that you phase it out, that particular challenge? Also, there's a significant decrease in terms of proportion of males in terms of registering or graduating. What is the plan of the department to get that? Because it's not an yo-yo type of an approach where if you elevate women, you just ensure that you elevate women, then males are now suffering. I think we are really concerned also in terms of that, because gender covers both women and men. You know, so I'm just worried what might be the cause that makes Honorable Khale a decline, particularly from the side of males. That significant proportion that we... Can I share my meeting? That decline, I think, for us as the committee, should be a call for concern. Because much as we are fighting for patriarchy, Honorable Nzimande, we are not fighting for patriarchy with understanding that you must also make the other side to suffer the consequence. Instead, we are saying let's strike a balance where at the end of the day, both males and females are also benefiting. Lastly, from my side, although it's not even in your agenda, I'm a bit concerned about what is happening in Tshwane University of Technology, where there was even a mortality to that effect, you know. So I'm just for the benefit of us as a committee to know, because linked to it is element of tribalism, and I think tribalism linked to issues of race might also overlap if we are not going to have plans in place to ensure that we keep it. What are the plans? It's unfortunate, Mr. Patel. We expected the minister, but now that you are here, you'll have to drive it in the vehicle itself. Those were the last questions. May I then afford you the opportunity to respond?
Could I ask myself to first go and then I'll wrap up?
Can I please it up front? In case you have reservations of answering any other questions, please do not answer it. You'll rather refer it there. Because remember, any proceeding that we are embarking upon is in terms of Section 69 of the Constitution. So anything that would be raised would be considered serious. So in case you don't have any answer, be fair to yourself so that you don't really contravene the provisions of the Constitution.
Okay. All right, I think Shankar has decided to plead the fifth. Jefferson, we have identified on slide 9, we will make that data available, Chantel, in regards to the breakdown in terms of gender. I think it's very important. We'll make that available. The reasons around the issue of women, honorable members, the issue is that that's what the analysis is showing. We haven't gone in depth into it, and I think that the university branch will be looking at a number of these particular areas, so we will go into it. Remember the comments in regards to the public on the social inclusion, the comment stage is closed. The process is now completely ahead of the minister. So he has opened the public process up. Submissions have been received. He has to apply his mind in regards to the public comment and then issue that draft as a final particular policy. Some of these were comments which I had covered in my presentations, and I think in the comments that you made, you highlighted the concerns of the committee, and they will be, they note that it actually emphasizes, for example, the issue of dropouts, and we in the department will take serious issue because we've identified it as a wastage. As a wastage. The transformation oversight committee chairperson, I'm not too afraid would they work up to date in terms of the detail. They fall into another branch, but perhaps you can advise whether there may be an opportunity to give the transformation oversight committee an opportunity to address this particular committee. But by and large, the recommendations have been to the minister around concerns around this transformation particular issues. The minister takes that advice, and then the policy machinery is quite slow in regards to the way that we interact. It's not that we have direct control over our institutions like schools. And so, those things get taken into account with further instructions being given to the department to look into them further. So some of these interventions that we spoke about are trying to mitigate that. There was the journey, I think you said journey without a destination. In regards to journey without a destination, Jefferson, we're very clear where our destination is. Our destination is that we have to ensure equity in regards to dealing with the injustices of the past. And Jefferson, as Honorable Chetty indicated, I can only answer as a public servant, and in terms of a public servant in terms of the Constitution compels us to deal with redressing the imbalances of the past. So the question is, if 5 in every 10 Indian young people are getting opportunities in the university, and because of limited space, we only have 2 out of 10 African young people getting opportunity into university. Clearly, with limited opportunity, we will have to ensure that there is equity and representativity. The issue is that came up, a relative issue was around standards. All standards are strictly adhered to in terms of the admission requirements into university. Almost no university has put in strictly race as a criteria for admission. Just because you've got a matric, you will get into university. There are criteria in terms of faculties, etc. But Jefferson, the destination is that if we want to build social cohesion, etc., my humble view as a public servant in terms of the Constitution is we will have to provide them equal opportunities to undo, as I indicated in my opening slide, a colonial past. And we have to accept that young people in South Africa have different experiences. There is what we call the legacy of poverty. You cannot compare a young person that walks for kilometers to a school in a hot, into a rural school, to my daughter, for example, who lives in a suburb, who has access to transport. And we as a society will have to come to grips with those particular issues. Because if we don't deal with it, the young people will take it in their hands to deal with it. Thank you very much.
Any input you can? It's fine. Lastly, from my side, 1955, Cape Town,
one of the clauses that was agreed upon that the doors of learning and culture shall be open to all. I just want to check, how far is this progressive realization from the side of the DHI department in terms of ensuring that a higher education becomes free?
Chairperson, thank you very much for that opportunity. You know, it reminds me when I started in this thing in, was it in 2000, I was sitting in a portfolio committee, and a very same question was posed to me by an honorable member who was the chairperson of the higher education. Chairperson, we are giving effect to the Freedom Charter. The Freedom Charter says that the doors of learning will be open, number one. And number two is that higher education will be accessible, made accessible to those on merit. It does not directly speak to free education, Honorable Chair. However, we both in terms of the resolutions of the governing party, that was both 2007 and 2012, the Ministerial Committee in regards to funding is looking at making higher education fee-free for the poor. So what it means is, and not the poor as arbitrarily designed, we mean the least poor. So maybe 80% of our population at some time can be less poor. That means we're targeting towards that. That includes the middle, the missing middle. Chairperson. So progressively, in terms of our enrollment planning, we are aiming to increase our enrollment by 50% in the next 15 years. Yes. I don't know if I answered the question. It's not something that we can always answer.
I don't think you are not some psyching.
Eh?
I don't think you are some psyching the 50% target that you're speaking to.
Yes, that's in the NDP. Okay. From 1 million now to in more than that. In fact, it's 62%. From 1 million to 1.62 million in 2030.
Thank you very much. I think this was more informative and more encouraging for us to always ensure that we take our oversight. Like I said, Honorable Musanga, we are not going to open for further questions or clarities. In case you still have a pending question, I would afford you an opportunity immediately after concluding this presentation. When the delegation goes out, you can just accompany them. But remember we said there are still outstanding issues from their side, which they also admitted that we'll still have to relook into it. Either way, you can always make a submission to us as a committee and further engage. Honorable Nkanga, Honorable Khale. Whip. I'll always solicit your wisdom. Fine, ask.
Issue of the, you said only of slide 4, in terms of the participation from 1993 to 2012. I've seen here your whites are dropping, the number is dropping. My concern is, where are they going to?
I said, on our own account, with due respect, in case the delegation is not in a position to give answers, they must say so. And I took it for that matter that by virtue that they did not respond, maybe they don't respond, Mr. Patel. Okay, sorry.
No, Chairperson, I responded. I fused the question from the Honorable Chetty with that, and I think the Honorable Member was out of the House for a few seconds. I said that in terms of the Constitution, we have to begin to provide representation across. Now, the numbers have not decreased, Honorable Chair, the percentage. So what happens is, the question will ask, if in 1993, every 8 people in university were white, we're saying that now, every 3 people are white. It means in terms of the entry, everybody has to begin to take opportunities in regards to life. So, yes, the question may be, those that had an advantage of getting in before may not be getting in. they will be doing what everybody else that are not in university are doing, either looking at the technical college.
You respect, you know the danger of giving answers on the basis of assumptions that is not tested. It's really worrying. I'll tell you an example. During the local government dispensation, some of the white, so-called white, maybe just to afford us an understanding, opted not to use the graveyard that are used by blacks. When we deracialized also access to graveyards, they opted to relocate. And the question by then would be, where are they going? So it's either you know where they are going or you don't know, you know. So in this case, I think it's simple. If the number is declining and you have not tested it, please let's not assume. Because the danger that you might be sitting with might be a situation where we would emerge out of this meeting with a perception that might create a serious problem. So I'm just appealing. In case we don't have a factual response, there's no harm if we appreciate that we'll still go further and engage on this particular matter. I think it's a fair response. And I deliberately wanted us to omit it because I could foresee that at times when you overlook questions, not because you don't have answers, but is the difficulty in terms of putting it into a clear perspective so that at the end of the day, whoever that is posing a question would be having a better understanding. But in this case, honestly speaking, if you don't have an answer, where is this white community going, you know, why is there a decline, then I would really suggest that let's put it in abeyance in case you still have to come back, or where we can conclude as a committee that you must make your latest submissions in writing on all outstanding issues, you can always incorporate. But still, even that time, if it's not yet tested, let us not come here and give our own interpretation. Because at times, we don't want to further engage or degenerate a meeting into a dialogue unnecessarily. So I think in that note, we wish to acknowledge with gratitude your presence and also convey issues raised by the committee to the minister. The committee is at liberty at any given time to interact with the minister, should the minister be available. But I hope this was really more informative, and it's very clear that our vision is one, our destination is one, is to ensure that we do away with the disparities of the past and ensure that where there are still weaknesses, as a collective leadership, we also join hands together and ensure that we address challenges that are still ahead. Indeed, we must appreciate and acknowledge that even in the higher education, we still have some shortcomings that needs to be attended to. And also, maybe let me take this opportunity to welcome the input made by the researcher on issues of women. I think it has really been helpful for the committee to interact with the report. In that note, I'm not sure from the side Mr. Patel mentioned there, whether from the side is there anything that you'd wish to elevate to the attention of the committee. In the absence, anything from the side? Thank you very much. Can we then release the delegation with the 5 minutes rushing of legs so that you also afford Honorable Mutanga an opportunity to accompany Mr. Patel?
Sure. Just want to find out, earlier on, Chairperson called my name and Honorable Mutanga. So just want to end call Honorable Zimandi. Just want to call based on what we are raising there.
Can I release the honorable delegation? I don't understand the question. You make me to understand. Thank you very much.
Do you want a caucus, Chief?
No, not caucus. I think you have fresh of legs.
Contrast the Yeah, they call me.
Myself.
I don't see a need for Imbabazan and the second municipality that we went to for the extension. But it has put on record that it's a, the stakeholders, the councillors, and your administrator and the provincial department has already negotiated the extension. With that, I would say those who have the right to move for the adoption, they must do so, so that we don't spend time on this matter.
Honorable Zimani.
Yeah, sir. The instability on municipality is a serious matter, sir. And if it affects service delivery as it did in Mbabazane, given the fact that Mbabazane is a municipality that the demarcation would fuse it into a new, it would take a new shape of municipality, I think, sir, it's only fair that the extension of the termination and all the observations that come with the oversight we played should therefore, Chair, be taken note of, and I propose, Chair, the adoption of the report.
Remember also on our table that there were issues around performance agreement that are still outstanding, you know. And otherwise it will not serve any purpose for us to say disengage in terms of Section 139 Subsection 1, I mean B, for the mere reason that we are saying let's leave them in array. I don't think it would be proper. So we need to provide leadership as a suggestion from Honorable Nzimande. Are you then moving, Honorable Nzimande, that we move with the proposal as is? Any second? Honourable members, indeed, we must appreciate there are weaknesses. It doesn't mean everything that we are proving is not catered for. If you have gone through the report, you'd realize that the report also acknowledges that there were shortcomings that still needs to be attended to. For example, we'd go to bullet 19.1. As the committee, would recall that you also observed that the commission did not know that, sir.
I thought Honourable Zimande moved for the adoption, and Pimbi was about to. Then you
I'm getting there. I was not aware of what I was doing, but I'm just trying to make an emphasis that indeed we still acknowledge that there are still compliance issues. For example, quarterly reports that are supposed to be presented to us, we are condemned. That is not happening, and it's our duty as the committee to ensure that we also write further a letter to the MEC to say we still want that report. Not only on this one, also on about this. Any second to the proposal? Honorable Klimbe? Thank you very much. Any counter? No, thank you very much. Can you then go to the third report on Umboti local municipality? Honorable Tavejani?
Chair, I move that the report be adopted, because also with the amendment that you have made mention, the area that I'm not sure how do we deal with it, Chair, is the outstanding issues, because you would recall that in that municipality they kept on emphasizing that what remains is just to put the mayor, the deputy mayor, the mayor, put the over section 79, 80, you know, committee in order to work. How do we capture that part when I agree with that topic?
Okay. A phrasing of that, Honorable Zimande. No, let me start it, Honorable Shetty.
Yeah, thank you, sir. The concern basically exactly on what Honorable Zimande said. This report is well, Chair, and I agree with everything that you said. We've been there, we've done this, we've done it, especially local, we know what's happening. And I also agree, and I was going to add a bit to what the Honourable Zimande said. I come from KZN, and we are well aware of what's happened with the new demarcations, these municipalities as well, if you do an adverse or go contrary to what has been proposed right now, will have a further impact because Mbabazani is going into late month. So there's already going to be just 2 months' time. And why do we want to go and dissolve something? And we have another issue where the one we dissolve with Micropana, but even worse off than what it was before. So I'm just saying, I agree to what the Honourable Demand has said firstly, why we should have put that one. But my only concern on this one, Chair, is that by now we should have got the report. Because one of the key issues there for them to elect that mayor, and they gave us a guarantee and a committee that sat there that they were ready to do that in 2 weeks' time. And I just want to find out, has there been any report or a liaison between them and us, or the officials, if that did take place? My concern this year was, we were told by Mr. Pierre that that was the only thing preventing them from moving out. And that's what my concern was. It was only 2 weeks why we had to give them extension to March. The other two, I agree clearly. Abakaluti, we knew what was the story, and Mbabazani, we knew what the story was. But they gave us the understanding that it was only for them just to elect the mayor, the exco, and then they were going to carry on running, and Cocton was moving out. But so that's the only concern I have on that.
There was also a report of forensic investigation. That report, in most of its recommendations, are still supposed to be executed. I think it's still outstanding. So likewise, in most instances, when these people are presenting, they'll always try to present what is nice. But our duty as a committee is to go deeper and ensure that we also establish on our own what might be the challenges, so that we don't fall trap of their submissions to us. I think we must also be observant in terms of that. There are also vacant positions, especially in the senior management, which still needs to be filled up. So I'm just saying, on the basis of that, these are some of the issues that are still outstanding. There's been a mover, Honorable Tabejani, has moved, but he wanted us to coin the resolution so that it also caters for all outstanding issues. But if you check 16.1, Honorable Tabejani, critically we are specific to say these are the issues that are still outstanding, and we have captured them as part of the report so that as and when we recommend, we bear it in our mind that we took note that these are still outstanding issues. And I will
check two things on that. It's purely because of this that I raised my comment. Because at the meeting, we were informed that this will take place within the 2 week period. If you recall, they couldn't do the Section 79 and 80, they couldn't do the implementation because the previous guys refused to implement those resolutions. And they said once they elected the new mayor and the exco, those things will all fall in place. And that's why I'm still saying I'm having this issue. I'm not going against it. But I'm saying they gave us an undertaking that this is what would happen. In 2 weeks' time, the administrator was calling for the election, and immediately thereafter, this will fall into place.
Okay.
And so we they're not doing that.
Can we then do the same? Because we still have an obligation to do also monetary in terms of whatever that has been resolved. Can we say we would ensure at the level of administration that we also write letters as follow-ups? Not only as follow-ups, but also let us just to acknowledge role play by different stakeholders, both internal and external, just to say we really appreciate their presence. It's just a matter of saying one of few things that still needs to be followed up. I think it can always be catered for and be reported in the next meeting. Honorable Zimande?
I wanted to second the mover for the adoption. And I'm saying, Chair, whilst I hear what my colleagues are saying, but you see, Chair, this governance is not it's not like electing a crash committee or a Sunday school committee where you are just saying now there's a chairperson, so everything is then hunky-dory, it's going. So hence the request, Chair, if you look at it, they are timing it at least 3 months, where the council still need to be called after this meeting, the mayor to resume those functions and that kind of thing. And I think just the time till February as they requested, I think whatever they said, for me, as I argued in that in my input in the hall because it's not about tomorrow sitting and having a governance committee and therefore you resolve your governance matters. I'm sure it's, most of us who of my colleagues, well, I don't have that experience, but who have been charged with the responsibility of running to be at the helm of governance would understand that it's not a question of...
So in essence, you're also emphasizing that issues of capacity will also be coupled with it. Hence, you would recall, even during that era, we also engaged SALDA to say that SALDA develop also capacity building programs that would also ensure that we enhance capacity of counselors. Because that is also the other weakness that we are also picking. I think it's more progressive. Honorable Temo, I think you are the last on this.
I wanted to say to the that he has just moved for the adoption of the report, so there's no need. Yeah, he seconded, but now he keeps on elaborating as an old person, so I didn't want to.
Honorable Demoko, you are out of order. Can I rule you? You are out of order.
But we need to be consistent.
Honorable Demoko, your point is taken, but you are out of order. Honorable members, allow me to take this opportunity to thank you all for participating in this meeting. I know and believe that because we are working, we would always confront each other either way, you know. But what I must appreciate is that while it's happening, while in the line of duty, Honorable Tonejan, it's fair enough, unlike where we differ outside there. For those that one might have toppled on their toes, once again, thousand apologies. It happened while in the line of duty. Honorable George. Can
are we going to stay for that?
Yes, you will.
Thank you.
Can I then officially declare this meeting closed, please? Can I ask all our members to remain? There was a request earlier on the issue of Honorable Tovejani around the issue of petition. The meeting is officially closed. Thank you very much. Thanks,
no, thanks, honorable members. It's sad that we can't even tell whether we are going or not going. Less than a week to go. Yeah, maybe the... Come again? Yeah, you can.
We are waiting. Yeah. No, sir, without interjecting with honest utmost respect, sir. It's just that I needed to give a context before you give the whatever the news you have. And that is, members, there is a discussion in the WIPAD on how much do we, as you remember, the work of the WIPAD is to do with the putting, populating the activities of Parliament. Or of the NCOP, whether albeit programs, albeit select committee activities, albeit plenaries. There is an issue on, for instance, finding a slot for the debate on the intergovernmental debt, where the program itself is full and there's an engagement on that matter between the political parties that are engaging in the chief whip. But also that in terms of the program, we were due to go, but the issue is how much, what is holding so much is the issue of whether the agenda of the NCOP for this year, how intense it is and how much it is. So I don't know in terms of then what the chair was going to say, but just to give this context in terms of what we are preoccupied with at the WIPAR, in terms of the content of the program, in terms of the importance of the matters before the NCOP. And that is being collated, and I think that might be one of the
factors that might determine whether we're living or not. Thank you, Chair. And I deeply apologize again for interjecting for just to give this context.
Thanks, Honorable Nzimande. In essence, the application is still not yet been formally approved or declined. We are waiting. You would recall that the program of the third term was approved with this particular study tour. The only difference was that initially was supposed to be next week, and then they then came back to us to say the suitable time for them is the 23rd to 29th, and an adjustment has been since done in that regard. I'm sure 2 weeks down the line, we don't hear anything from the upper offices. Thank you very much. That's the update, Honourable Malakis. Honourable, whether you will follow up, Honourable, in that order.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, my question is whether the application has yet reached the Chief Whip, and when did it reach the Chief Whip, if it has reached her yet. My second one is a comment, and that is that it is not sad that we don't know whether we're going yet. It's embarrassing. It's downright embarrassing. There's one thing to sit in a committee in front of citizens of this country and look like an utter disgrace because we're ill-prepared. It's a completely different story to look ill-prepared and also like a disgrace in front of another nation. It is a complete and utter disgrace to be so ill-prepared 2 weeks before we have to go overseas. There's no other word for it. It's not sad, it's not sorry, it's a disgrace. It's humiliating. We look like absolute fools. With all due respect. Now, I would like to know whether the application is yet on the table of the Chief Whip, and when did it reach the Chief Whip? Thank you.
Just before you come to Honorable Mokwele, I'm sure you would know, Honorable Mekanakis, that the responsibility of the management of the committee is to take the application to the office of the Chair of and that's where our responsibility ends. Escalation above is something different beyond our scope. However, looking at the frustrations that we had to request the WIP last week to say, can you try and check the whereabouts of this thing? Apparently, I may not even speak on his behalf. Maybe he can speak better than me. Honorable Simandi, before Mukwele you will come, I thought the question you may ask, they might also still impact on the answer.
The process of an application starts with the chairperson of a select into a chair of chairs, which is the house chair, and from there it goes to the political committee, which is the chair, which includes the chair of council. And when that part of the process is completed, it then gets into the political managers, which is the chief whippery. So in this instance, the application is somewhere in between. I think that's the answer. Somewhere in between those. It hasn't reached the final process, but it's there in that process. It has reached. It has gone through the first, second phases. So it's now almost being final. As I said, I need to make this point that it's to do with the finalization of the plenaries, whether there will be matters that require voting during that week, and whether those matters are of paramount importance than a trip that would take more than, what is it, a fifth of the of the of the voting members of the council. So those are the determining factors, part of the determining factors. Hence, this delay. The conclusion of the program for the year is not finalized in terms of plenaries and subject matters for the plenary.
Honorable Mukwele, I've seen you.
Chairperson, thank you. I think Kastwana Rari Mutu Hwezeza Kubo Hwezeza Musi Hoka Kubo Akisika English Kese Swana Seo Mutu Kore Sambodi Kore Hwezeza Musi Hoka Kubo Baba Ukile Mbata Bata Translate
Covered you with blankets to create a night.
In Wipari. In Wipari. We pick up a monoana. Or somebody we pick up a monoana and our garamu. In Wipari, this matter was discussed. And the chief whip said, Haana, anything to do with our study tour on her table. She said so to us this morning. I don't know whether it is administrative or political, because yes, we know we prioritize the plenary, and prioritizing the plenary also we must be equipped as committee members. Like my colleague has said, Honorable Mikalaika has said, we can't afford to sit in front of community and look as if we are not prepared. We must just say the facts here. Who is playing games with us? Is it administratively or politically? Because some of us have responsibilities. Last week, the committee was supposed to sit in Joburg. I will cite an example. It looked like administratively somebody didn't do his or her duties. Some of us have programmed our work to say, no, we will be in Johannesburg. At the 11th hour, you must be in Cape Town doing a petition. Whereas you knew you are supposed to be there. We were supposed to go to India last week. The matter has passed through all the processes, it has been approved that we are no longer going next week, but we are going on that other week. Now we are sitting here in terms of who is supposed to authorize or who is supposed to take a paper. If it comes to a push, why don't we take that paper ourselves and put it in whoever that needs to sign the paper and sign it? Or why can't we go and do, because we cannot just sit here and try to defend something that is not defendable. We really can't do that. Honorable Chair, your committee has got backlogs, and it doesn't look good to other members. It doesn't look good to community members that have lodged the petition. We must go as agreed, as authorized, as approved by the highest political structure. We were sitting here last week, that other week, with the program chairperson. He said to us, that matter has been at the last stage. Now it's between two stages. Who is fooling who here? Kemangwa reze tambusiko kakobo mudula.
Honorable
City. Yeah, thank you, Chair. Again, with all due respect to the work, we were given undertaking last week in this very room, after our Safety and Security Committee meeting, that the WOP was going to be meeting the following morning, and all of us would be made aware of what the outcome of that was. And Chair, if you recall collectively, we all agreed, we're responsible. And I can say it right now, we don't want to make the issue about whether we're going to India, whether it's a holiday or not. Your committee needs to sort itself out.
we've got this backlog, and we needed to go and understand exactly what was happening to the petition, and yet we weren't doing it. This was not a joke. It came out of our step plan. Now, if we sit down and do a step plan, and these are one, or this is one of the issues that come out of it, no one has the right to undermine what we did in our committee, first and foremost. So if that's the case, we're just becoming a talk shop. And if, as has been unfolding right now, I hate to believe that it is political infighting, and I'm making it open. That is where the backlog is. But what's worse, if it is incompetence on the administrative part, then I have a major issue with that. Because it means now administratively, we as politicians have been crippled in making sure we execute our duties out there. And I'm saying this very openly here. But I think that a committee, that within 24 hours, if we are not told as to whether the SIP is on or off, we don't have to wait for the management committee to say tomorrow. As our member said, last week it was discussed in the management meeting. So people are well aware, decision makers are well aware of what's happening. If within 24 hours we do not get an answer, then I'm saying this committee will not go to India. We must now have the brazen or have the attitude to say enough is enough. Because, Chairperson, this was already penciled in the program of the new draft, a one-week study tour. Now, if people have changed it for other reasons, they must be clear. But I am not going to be controlled by fossils who don't impact on my life directly, but affect my life because of the commitment. And I'm saying to you, enough is enough. And so I'm hoping amongst our members here, there is a person bold enough not to worry about the trip to India, the trip to India, but to make a stand that within 24 hours, or if you want it to 48 hours, that we have a decision, plain English, as a committee. We will send them a letter stating the trip is cancelled. If they can't make decisions, we'll make decisions for them, Chair. Thank you.
Honorable Mekalekis and the Manopole, you will be the last, then we'll have four. Honorable Chair, because I thought you are chairing. I can't chair you while you are chairing. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. One of you at the time is bad enough. That's just on a lighter note. Chairperson, I would like to refer to the Honorable Whip when he said it's somewhere in between. And it's clear from that we as a committee don't know exactly where the application is. It's somewhere in between. Now, if they let us know in this week, and we go in 2 weeks' time, it will mean that we have 1 week to prepare. Now, that's not going to reflect on whoever has the application at the moment somewhere in between. It's not going to reflect on that person. It's going to reflect on you, Chairperson, and it's going to reflect on us as members of the committee. With the current way the committee is going, and I'm not saying it's your fault, but hear me out. With the current way the committee is going, with the way it was run in the previous term, if we go and sit in front of the Indian government ill-prepared, it's not going to look good. And unless you are prepared to then take the blame for it, which I don't think you should, because it's not fair towards you, I honestly think that we should say that rather postpone it or call it off than to push through to the last minute and go and sit in India ill-prepared. Because to be quite honest with you, if that is the way we're going to run this trip to India, then I'm sorry, I'm really having doubts whether I want to be a part of it, because we're going to spend thousands of rands of taxpayers' money, go and sit there ill-prepared, and we're not going to learn anything if we're ill-prepared. So we might as well stay at home. And to be honest, then the council and parliament's work should receive first preference, because at least over here we will do something productive and be properly prepared. So unless we can get a very urgent answer and make sure that we are properly prepared, I would suggest for your sake and for all of our sakes that we really consider cancelling or postponing this trip. Thank you.
Honorable Manopole, and then Honorable Mahathir will be the last of your time.
Thank you, Chair. Nagamiri, Honorable Tebogo, name is Thaba Nkhutsa.
Chair, that was difficult because it's a proposal that didn't move in seconds and to speak now. But now I would like to make an appeal, like if the whip have raised the issue that is between the two offices at the moment. Let us maybe give over to the chairperson, to guide us and give us a way forward. Maybe between to this week, because we have been harsh on the chairperson. My view that the report has been given to us now by the whip and the chairperson, that they have done their part as the responsibility of the respective meeting. Now it's unfortunate that decision does not lie on them. So let us give the chairperson the benefit of the doubt and give him the truth and the responsibility that he is putting, and give us a proper guidance. Maybe he might be able to persuade those who are supposed to be persuaded and on that, because of I'm saying that we let us not jump the gun before now. We have not given the chairperson the chance to be able to persuade the others. So that's one that make a appeal. So now I hope that the Honorable Mahati will be able to second me.
However, because Honorable Sanga just arrived, I'm not going to. Chairperson, on a lighter note, I think all of us were equally frustrated. And if one was going to suggest that as an African, whenever there's a trip and there's always these hiccups, what should be your take? I would have advised to say let's cancel or postpone, as Asia suggested. Because at times pursuing a matter that we can really see that there are obstacles ahead. Tomorrow, should anything come not our way, it will always be a matter that will always be referred to, that we told to, that is why we're doing this and this and this. And it's very unfortunate, it's happening in one committee, which is most crucial committee. Like we have said in the previous meeting, there's a need for us collectively to sit together and view these challenges not as the chair or the whip's challenges, but to take collective responsibility. And now I'm saying, Chair, you have reported several times around the trip together with the whip. And if you check, most of the time, you still bring hope that this thing might be considered. But the time is running out of our head, you know. So now I was going to suggest a person with due respect. Tomorrow there's this thing, APEC meeting, where we'll be sitting with the Auditor General. Maybe we can once say, both yourself and the whip, meet with the relevant people, check if there's that likelihood that the trip might still continue. If not, let them do it. The same way they did with Gauteng. We knew in terms of the program that we're supposed to go to Gauteng on Gauteng, but we're just told that it's been cancelled, and not all of us, we cooperated. So I was saying, Jefferson, for the benefit here, the entire committee, now I was going to suggest that let's really afford you once again an opportunity and get a report tomorrow. My worry is when there's supposed to be another meeting in many places at this trial.
Honorable members, we will say it again tomorrow after the meeting of with the Auditor General. We will then request you to remain behind and give you the briefing, which will then tell us whether finally the trip has been cancelled or is there any indication. And I want to apologize for all this frustration. It wasn't supposed to be, you know, going through your nerves. It is because, you know, sometimes you don't have the authority. Once we agree that the committee to